Hi, my name is Sam Williams, and welcome to part 2 of episode number 81 of my 6G Music Podcast, The Millennial Throwback Machine. Hello, so first of all, I'd like to welcome all you to part 2 of episode number 81 of my 6G Music Podcast, Millennial Throwback Machine. I'm Sam Williams, and for those of you who are just now discovering this podcast, either on the Apple Podcast app, or in Stitcher, or in iHeartRadio, or on Google Play Music, or on Spotify, and you're wondering, so what the heck is, I'm going to give you a brief description of what the show is all about. Okay, so I'm Sam Williams, and I'm a 24-year-old songwriter slash producer, but I'm also a huge 6G Music fan. /expert/nerd, and each week with this podcast, I take one song by one artist from the 60s to put the show in two parts. First part of the show, I talk about my opinion on the song and why I think it's so good, or why I think it sucks, and do my own personal analysis on the arrangement of the song, which will include the chords, melody, and lyrics. And the second part of the show, I dig deep into the history behind that track. And that part of the show, I talk about who wrote the song, who produced it, what studio the song was recorded at, who are the musicians in the track, whether that be the band members or the studio musicians in the track, and the history behind the artists that did it, the history behind the songwriters that wrote the song, and also where the studio of the song was originally recorded at, where that studio was located at, and where the label at the song was originally released on, where that label was located at, and the peak position the song made up on the Billboard Hot 100 chart originally when it first came out, and the year and month it was released. All that is in the second part of this show. Moving on, let's talk about the history behind last week's song, which was Steam's Na Na Na, Hey Kiss Him Goodbye. Because like I said before, part one of this two-part episode of this podcast, most people probably don't know the story behind the song. Because when he found out the name of the band who recorded this track, I'm sure a lot of questions popped up into your head, like, who is this band called Steam? And how come I don't know any of their other songs? How come I'm not familiar with anything else that they did? Well, I'm going to explain to you about all that in just a few moments. Okay, so in a nutshell, Steam was essentially a one-hit wonder. And to say that they were a band probably isn't the most accurate description of the so-called group called Steam. And while we're at it, let's talk about the dictionary definition of a one-hit wonder for a second. Because it's been a while since I've done a one-hit wonder on the show. Okay, so if you're wondering exactly what a one-hit wonder is, if you're new to the term, it was essentially an artist or band or duo that only had one song that made the Billboard Top 40 on the Hot 100 chart, and that's it. Now, Billboard at the time had several different charts back in the 60s. Keep that in mind. So if an artist had a bunch of songs that made the country charts, and only one song that made the top 40 on the Billboard Hot 100, they are technically still considered a one-hit wonder. And the same rules apply if you were an artist or band that had a bunch of songs that hit the charts in the R&B charts, and only one song that made the top 40 in the Hot 100, you were still considered a one-hit wonder. Now, if you're wondering exactly why you haven't heard of a single other song by this quote-unquote group called Steam, that's pretty much the reason why. They only had one song that made the charts, and that was it, and that was the song. Now, before I get into exactly who was this group called Steam and how the song came about, I have to explain something else to you. You see, back in the 60s, before there was Spotify or Apple Music, before you can just go on to any one of those platforms and listen to any song you want, people used to have record players, and people used to shove out the hard-earned cash to buy vinyl, and aka LPs, which are albums essentially with about six songs on each side. Now, before you can just listen to and stream one song online with essentially just one click or tap of a screen, I mean, that's what you can do right now. Before you could do that, you used to have to actually go out and spend an approximately 69 cents on what was called a 45 single. Now, aside from listening to the AM radio, this is how people used to listen to music. Now, back then, when you bought a 45, which, by the way, which is, I like to think of a 45 as kind of like, it's about the same size of a CD, except it's a little bit bigger. But it was essentially just like a piece of wax with the CD kind of labeling in the center with the surrounding area, which is essentially black wax. And in that sort of leather cover art, it would say the name of the artist and the song on it and who wrote it and usually who produced it and the name of the label the song was released on and who sometimes arranged it as well. Sometimes they credit the engineer, but most of the time they didn't. But anyways, unlike today where you can listen to just to one song, you know, all you have to do is just click on the song and the cover art of the single would show up. You know, that's today's world. But 50 years ago, when you bought a 45, you would always get two songs for the price of one. You would get the A side and you would get the B side because essentially it was a two-sided single, right? You have A side, which is the top side, and you flip the record over and you would get the B side. Back then, they used to have turntables, so you used to be able to just listen to the song, and then after it was over, you'd have to physically flip the record over to hear the other side, which was the B side. Now, back in the 60s, all the major songwriters / producers of that time were always writing their best songs to be intended as A-sides. And the A-sides would 9 times out of 10 become major hits. And some of them didn't become hits, but a lot of them did. And the most mediocre okay songs that they couldn't fully get behind that these songwriters and producers were working on back then, they would always reserve those songs as B-sides. So for most of the time, you rarely heard a B-side of a hit record on top 40 radio. And the A-side would always get the most radio airplay, meaning you would pretty much never hear a B-side on top 40 radio. What you would always hear on the radio were the hit A-side singles. Now, in most instances, the A-side would wind up making the charts, but the B-side would go unnoticed and unheard unless you bought the single. But since in the recording process, a lot of times it would be easy to predict which songs would become hits after they would, you know, before they would become released, you know, a lot of times it was easy for the songwriters to decipher which songs were going to be the A-sides, the ones that they're going to push as the potential hit, and which ones should be released as B-sides, just sort of mediocre, okay songs that they didn't really feel like were strong enough to be considered as an A-side single. But sometimes a song that in the recording process, the writers originally thought and intended would be the B-side, and a lot of times songs that were released as B-sides, this song would ultimately wind up becoming a big hit, even though the songwriters never intended the song to be other than a throwaway B-side. They never thought this was going to be a hit. They thought this was going to be sort of their, you know, mediocre, sort of an okay song. And essentially, that is exactly what happened with this song. Okay, so now let's talk about the origins of the song. Okay, so to answer to your first question that came to mind about this track, was there an actual band called Steam? And to be honest with you, the answer to this question is no. And if you're wondering, so if there was no such group as Steam, then who is Steam then? Well, this song, this huge hit that's literally played everywhere and is heard in stadiums all across the world, you know, and specifically American sports arenas, this song was a creation of three songwriters named Paul Leka and Gary DiCarlo and Dale Frazier. Now, what happened was this. Gary DiCarlo was a lead vocalist on the song, and at the time, he was an artist signed to Mercury Records, and his producer was a guy named Paul Leka. Now, Paul, at the time, was a songwriter / producer based in the Brill Building. Remember that huge building that we talked about when I interviewed Mark Barkin? Yeah, he was a writer and producer that worked in that building. If you don't know anything about the Brill Building, I highly suggest you go back and listen to the interview episode because you'll learn a lot about it. Just go back and listen to it, and then you can go back and listen to this episode, and hopefully you'll have a better idea for what I'm talking about. He had previously wrote and produced a huge hit for a group from Ohio called the Lemon Pipers. And that song was Green Tambourine, which is a tune which is about as psychedelic pop as you can get back in the 60s. I mean, it literally is a dictionary definition of that genre, and it did go all the way up to number one in early 1968. Fast forward to like a year later in 69, he was now a house producer and songwriter working for Mercury Records. At the time, he was producing an artist named Gary DiCarlo, and he was going by the artist name Garrett Scott. Now, Gary had already released a single on Mercury under the name Garrett Scott called Working on a Groovy Thing. And by the way, when this happened, his version of the song completely got overshadowed by the Fifth Dimension's version of it, since Fifth Dimension was already an established band with an already established string of hits, you know, and since their version got released a week earlier before his, the Fifth Dimension's version made the top 20 on Billboard and became a huge hit, while Gary DiCarlo's version did not make the charts at all. But when this happened, it was time for them to release the follow-up single to Working on a Groovy Thing to see if maybe this would be the hit. Because this happened a lot back then. A lot of times, the artist's first single wasn't the hit, but then the follow-up was the hit. And so they decided they wanted to record, they wanted the next single after Working on a Groovy Thing. They decided on this track that was written by a Brill Building songwriter named Larry Weiss. They decided that they wanted the song to be the A-side, and the name of this track was called Sweet Laura Lee. And by the way, Larry Weiss was also based in the Brill Building. He was another Brill Building songwriter. And he was going to release this song as an A-side, but then they realized that they couldn't put out a one-side record and they needed a B-side to complete a 45 single. And then this is when this song came about. Okay, so when they were in the studio recording Na Na Na, Hey Kiss Him Goodbye, and keep in mind, Paul Lika was producing the song and Gary DiCarlo was the artist. He was the lead singer on the track. They were joined by a buddy of theirs in which they were in a band back in the early 60s called the Chateaus, named Dale Frazier. Essentially, Paul Lika, Gary DiCarlo, and Dale Frazier were all in the band back in the 60s called the Chateaus. And he suggested for the B-side to Sweet Laura Lee, they finish up an old song they had written when they were in the doo-wop group back in the 60s. And by the way, the name of the song was called Kiss Him Goodbye. And it was originally kind of a blues shuffle song. And so when Paul Lika started singing Na 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 to go along with the song's title as somewhat of a meaningless hook, because again, the song was originally just called Kiss Him Goodbye. It didn't really have a hook. So Paul Lika just started singing Na 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 Na, and then Gary DiCarlo jumped in and started singing Hey Hey Hey, and all of a sudden, they had a hook to go along with the song. And they came up with this hook as sort of a meaningless sort of, you know, like, not so great hook, because they were thinking to themselves that the song was originally intended as a throwaway B-side, and they never thought that the song would ever get heard from again, and people would never hear this song, and it was never going to become a hit. Because remember, they never thought that this song was going to be a hit. It was just intended as a throwaway B-side. Okay, so here's something else you probably didn't know about this song, and that is that the drum track was actually a pre-recorded loop that the three songwriters overdubbed their instruments onto. And the drum track of the song was actually extracted from another A-side single that Gary DiCarlo had already recorded for Mercury under the name Garrett Scott called Sugar. And that song was written by Neil Sedaka. So the engineer spliced this drum loop into the song from that other Gary DiCarlo single, something that was pretty ahead of its time, considering that this was before Pro Tools and modern-day recording technology. I mean, they were doing this all in tape. So really, the three songwriters simply added guitar and piano and organ and marimba onto the track, and that's it, since the drum track was already a pre-recorded drum loop that they essentially just overdubbed on top of. And Paul Lika did keys on the record, it seemed, backup, and David Chester played guitar, and Gary DiCarlo did the percussion, and Dale Frazier sang backup as well. So when they recorded this song, they went into Mercury Studios in New York in the Brill Building at 5 p.m., and they came out with a finished product by 7 a.m. the next day. And by the way, Warren Dewey was the engineer for the session, and he was the one responsible for splicing the drum track together for the song, taking it from the original Sugar song that Gary DiCarlo previously recorded for Mercury, the one written by Neil Sedaka. Okay, so this is what happened after they recorded the song in Mercury Studios and came out with the finished product. Bob Reno, who at the time was the head of Mercury Records, heard the song and thought it was fantastic and decided he wanted to put it out for one of Mercury's subsidiary labels. And by the way, that subsidiary label was called Fontana Records. And Paul and Bob initially promised to Gary that this song was going to be a solo single of his, and it was going to be a B-side to his single with Sweet Laura Lee being the A-side. And he was supposed to be the touring artist for the song. Keep in mind, they promised him that he was going to be the one singing the song all over the country if the song were to become a hit. But they ultimately went against him and released the single under the name Steam and got a completely different band to play the song live on TV and in person as well. And they ultimately decided to make Na 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 Na, Hey Kiss and Goodbye an A-side with a completely different song as the B-side. When this happened, the song shot all the way to number one in December of 69, making it one of the last number one hits of the 60s. And when this happened, an album was recorded, but not with the three musicians on Na Na Na, Hey Kiss and Goodbye. And actually, there was four musicians, but anyways, when the album was recorded, it was recorded with a completely different group of musicians altogether, and not Paul Leka, Gary DiCarlo, and Dale Frazier. Ultimately, not only was Gary not allowed to perform the song in public for many years, because he wasn't contractually allowed to do that, because they actually had another band playing the song live that wasn't him, and they had someone else singing the song live too, and they had that same singer lip-syncing that song on TV as well, you know, but this group had nothing to do with the recording of the song, because remember, the song was originally just three guys, Paul Leka, Gary DiCarlo, and Dale Frazier, and that's it. Gary was also not allowed to tell people that he was in fact a lead singer on this song. As you can imagine, this made him very unhappy, but at the same time, he was very proud of his performance he gave on this song, but he was not happy to not be allowed to tell anybody that he was in fact the original lead singer on the song. And like I said before, the band that was on tour, like promoting the song, originally had nothing to do with the song in the first place. And since this also happened, Gary DiCarlo's other songs that he put out on Mercury under the name Garrett Scott went into complete obscurity, not to be heard from again until they were compiled for an album that was released years and years and years later, called Gary DiCarlo Then and Now. And I believe this came out in like 2013, 2014, I don't really remember. But anyways, Gary eventually got to perform the song that he originally sang lead on, but by the time this could happen, he was well into his 60s and early 70s, and he also passed away a couple of years ago in 2017. But as you can imagine, I mean, he was very upset and frustrated and very sad to the point where he was experiencing some depression all just because that he couldn't sing the song live and he couldn't tell people that he was the original lead vocalist in the song, because he saw people hearing the song in public and singing along to it. And really, really badly, he just wanted to tell people, hey, I'm a lead singer for the song. But he was just so frustrated because he couldn't tell people that he was not the lead singer for the song because there was another group playing the song live out, you know, when the song was a hit and he wasn't involved in it. So, yeah, I mean, this song kind of has a tragic story behind it, because I've heard some of the other Gary DiCarlo singles and they actually sound really good. You know, the songs that he was going to put out under the name Garrett Scott. I mean, it's kind of unfortunate that this is how it happened and none of his other songs became hits, you know, because they easily could have had the potential of becoming huge hits, because I've listened to some of them and some of them sound really good. You know, So, unfortunately, this is how it happened. But again, this group was a one-hit wonder. So, you know, they put out an album after the song became a hit. But essentially, they had no other hits, and this was the only hit that they had. But it's been used in sporting arenas, and, you know, it's heard over and over and over again. In fact, I think it actually got sampled by a teen girl pop singer in the 2000s, back to the 2010s. It got sampled by a teen girl pop singer in the 2010s, and I remember hearing that song and thinking to myself, yeah, I know where that hook came from. You know, and they use a song every single time a player gets knocked out of a sports game or a team loses. You know, this is a song that they play. You know, so it's universally used everywhere, and, you know, this is essentially the story behind it. So that concludes part 2 of episode number 81 of Mystic Music Podcast, Millennial Throwback Machine. I'm Sam Williams, and if you found out some really cool and interesting mind-blowing facts about this particular song, and you never knew anything about it, and you thought, and you were like listening to this episode of this podcast, and you've heard this song over a million times, and your mind was completely blown when you were learning about all these crazy facts and information about this song, you can email me at samltwilliamicloud.com, and you can also follow me on Instagram at iHeartOldies and check out more of my original music at samwilliamsmusic.net. Now, as per usual with these episode of this podcast, here are the things you can find in the description of this episode of this podcast. One is that you can find the song specifically, so that way you can check it out. And also you can find you can check out the official Spotify playlist for this podcast and the official YouTube playlist for this podcast. There you'll find all the songs I've talked about on my show so far, including some songs that I've mentioned in some interviews. So when you go on there, you can listen to all the songs I've talked about, and hopefully that'll give you some ideas as to which songs I should cover next on my podcast that I haven't covered yet. If you do have some ideas or some suggestions for some songs I should do next on my podcast that I haven't talked about yet, you can email those suggestions to me at samltwilliamicloud.com. And you can also reach out to me on Instagram at iHeartOldies with your suggestions as well. But yeah, so also a couple of things I wanted to say before I end this episode of this podcast. Also, you can check out my official Redbubble merchandise store for this podcast. There you'll find the super cool logo that I came up with. I had somebody else design. It's the catchphrase I say at the end of every episode of this podcast, and keep on trucking tie-dye font with name my podcast in the bottom. Super cool. And there's a bunch of really cool items on there you can check out. If you decide to purchase anything, let me know. But if not, I appreciate some feedback on the price of each item in the store, plus, you know, like what you think of the logo itself. And also, one other thing I want to add on before I end this episode. Kristen DeBarge is actually the name of the artist that sampled this particular song, Na 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 Na, Hey Kiss Him Goodbye. And in one of her songs, she actually took the hook and actually like directly sampled the hook note for note. And, you know, and that was a huge hit for her like in the 2010s. And also, there's one thing I'm going to start doing next year for my podcast. And it's going to be kind of a new thing. But basically what I'm going to be doing is that there are a couple, like two or three artists that I did for this podcast, like literally the first two or three episodes I did of the show, and I haven't done them since. Now, basically, the way the show works is that I basically take one song by one artist from the 60s. I only do one song. So basically, you know, I did one song of theirs, and that was it. And then I did a little history behind them, but this was literally like the first one or two episodes of my podcast. And since the show is going to be 2 years old officially next year, I'm going to go back into a couple of my older episodes and do a song from that same artist that I did, like the first one or two or three episodes I did of my podcast. I'm going to do a different song by that exact same artist. Now, what I'm going to do is that I'm going to title these episodes a little bit differently than what I normally do for my podcasts. They're not just going to be called, you know, episode whatever, part one or part two. They're going to be called the retake episodes. Now, when you listen to this podcast And if the episode name, when you see the word retake next to it, that basically means that I'm doing a song by an artist I've already done on my podcast once before a long time ago. I'm just doing a different song by them that I haven't done on my podcast yet. Because I honestly feel like there's some artists on my show that I feel like I could revisit and just do another song by them. Because there's like some artists I did within the first couple episodes of my show, I feel like maybe I could just do another song by them and also talk about their history again. So that way, for any new listeners who are just tuning in and, you know, didn't listen to the first like 3 or 4 episodes, well, you know, you'll get the opportunity to hear the history behind those artists. And even if you were tuning in the first 3 or 4 episodes, you know, a lot people tend to forget information pretty easily. So I'm going to remind you a lot of their history, you know, just in case you forgot any of it, you know. And plus, it'd be cool for you guys to see what kind of other really great songs that they also did that you might not have heard, you know, before, you know. So I think that's going to be really cool. But yeah, so those episodes are going to be called retake episodes. So it's going to be like episode whatever, retake episode 1, or, you know, retake 2, whatever. Yeah, so those episodes are going to be called retake episodes. We're going to start doing them next year. So yeah, so I'm Sam Williams, and thank you guys again for joining me for listening to this podcast, Millennial Throwback Machine. Until next week, please keep things real.